Dubai Eye
103.8. Main topic explains our search for... Who's John?
Okay, so basically a woman named Karen posted on Facebook thanking and looking for John. And John saved her husband's life. So it sparked a debate among residents about when and when not to help in medical emergencies. And our ARN news reporter, Jay Sky, has more.
A Dubai tourist took to Facebook to make a public appeal to help find the man who saved her husband's life. Peter and Karen are currently in town visiting their son. While out at a shopping center, Peter began struggling to breathe. Speaking exclusively to ARN, he tells us what he remembers from the experience.
No, it's getting worse and worse. As I was sitting there, I slowly got up, got my wife, and I walked across, trying to breathe heavily, to the community pharmacy. And there I sat down, and then the big guy came up, John, I found out afterwards, and he's sort of trying to put the timely on my chest, and that was the last I remember.
According to Peter, he had choked on something he had to eat earlier that day when a man named John performed a life-saving procedure on him. They say he was gone by the time paramedics had finished performing the necessary treatment, but Peter had this to say to the man who was quick to act.
All I can say, thank you for saving my life, I think. That's all I can say. That was gone. I just could not breathe anything.
The couple never got a chance to thank him properly and have now launched a public appeal to help find him so they may do so. This incident has sparked discussions among residents on just how much we know about life-saving procedures. Do you know what to do in the event of such emergencies? Would you know when to intervene? Should residents be trained to perform CPR and the likes? We discuss the rules on how to be a good Samaritan.
It's going to be the main topic today, the main talker today here on the agenda, so do get your thoughts in on those questions. Do you know the answers to those questions? Would you know what to do in that situation?
You know, I did do a first aid course because before having kids, I wanted to know especially what to do with young babies. So I do know how to do CPR. Heimlich maneuver, I think I'd need probably a refresh course, but I think everybody should have that type of... It doesn't take long, does it? It's like half a day or something of first aid training. I think it's vitally important.
Yeah.
Do you know what to do, Zina Zelemer?
No. I've had some form of first aid training, but I think because I'm the type to just freak out in a medical emergency when I see a stranger choking, I would probably just call 999.
Do you know what to do, Tom?
I do not know what to do, but I take solace from the story that has just been shared with me by my peer and colleague, Mr. Malcolm Taylor, on the handover from the Business Breakfast to the Agenda, that he seemingly saved somebody's life by performing the Heimlich manoeuvre several years ago whilst he was based over in Cyprus. Had no formal training in it whatsoever, but as seen on TV.
Right.
So he'd seen it done on TV, realised that, well... if I don't do something now, she could well die. Mm. So performed this manoeuvre, she survived. Which prompts that question. How much do we... And I know a lot of medical professionals will be putting their hand in their heads at the moment going, no, don't go down this road. But how many of us, you know, have seen things like this on TV, whether it be CPR, whether it be a Heimlich manoeuvre or whatever, and therefore feel that we could perform it if... pushed to do so, and just how dangerous is that? You know, as seen on TV, is that if it's a matter of life or death, do we all feel that we have the tools within our resources to be able to do it?
You know what? As seen on TV, that doesn't sound right.
It doesn't.
Did Malcolm say he saved that guy's life?
It was a lady, and she survived. She was choking, and she'd gone a different colour, and she was about to lose consciousness. And he performed the Heimlich manoeuvre and a piece of food came flying out. But he was quick to admit that he'd never had any formal training. So, look, there's the decision. There's the life or death decision. I've never had any formal training. So, therefore, do I just stand back and hope for the best?
Mm.
Or do I go back into the depths of an episode of Casualty that I saw 10 years ago and go, I sort of think I know what I should do.
But then isn't it better to try and be successful rather than not and still have a negative outcome? Or, you see, this is where there's the grey area. Do you try and then hopefully you succeed or... could you make it worse, is the question.
Yeah, and there are legal consequences because things could have turned out very differently, sorry, Malcolm, and he could have gotten himself in trouble.
I know, and therefore I think there is an element here where you need to be cautious of. And when you asked me the question initially about would you do something like, or do you know what to do in this situation? I probably think I have an idea of what I know to do in the situation, but I don't have the qualifications to do that. And I'll be the first one to admit that, you know, I have heard horror stories here in the past where I've been prevented from getting involved, whether it be in a car crash, an accident scenario, something like that, for fear of it coming back or worsening the situation or it come back on you.
The other thing, how you were referring to as seen on TV, Tom, it's like we can expand this to this day and age where most people are learning things off YouTube. I know it probably comes under the same umbrella, but it's the idea. I'm not comparing medical emergency to changing a tire, but most people, you know, can learn to play the guitar, change a tire, all off of YouTube. The same thing can be said for, you know, Heimlich maneuver or simple first aid technique as well.
Serena Kerr, thank you very much indeed.
Anytime.
Much appreciate your thoughts. We're going to have Mohammed joining us in studio in just a few moments' time with more on this and other stories. So our thanks to all the team at the ARN News Centre. If you want to get involved, then feel free to do so. Would you feel comfortable performing the Heimlich manoeuvre on somebody if it came to that? What about CPR? What about other first aid procedures? And what about the Samaritan laws? How much do you know about the Samaritan laws here in the UAE? It is a grey area for many people, and therefore we're asking you for your thoughts. Do you feel that it is something that you are confident doing and undertaking?
Join the conversation on The Agenda
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Finn's been in touch with the show already. Morning to you, Finn. Saying love to the show. Consider John, the lifesaver, should have tickets to the men's final, let alone the semis. That's from Finn. Thank you for that one. This one from another of our listeners. Like Malcolm, I performed the Heimlich manoeuvre on a lady in a cafe in Dubai some years ago. It was all rather surreal. We didn't even speak to each other. And one from another of our listeners. Do put your names with these messages, if you can, so we can credit them to you. If you think you can do it, and it is life and death, just do it. If possible, take verbal approval from whoever is accompanying the dying person. Simple, says another of our listeners. Let's get back to today's talker, which is with regards to all things doing good. And we're still talking about what to do in the case of a medical emergency. Would you help out a stranger? How much do we know about the country's Good Samaritan laws? Do we know when and where to intervene and when not to intervene? We'll be hearing from residents in just a little while. But in the meantime, we've been joined by Mohammed Suleiman, who's joined us in studio to share a recent experience when you were out with your wife. Is that right?
That's right. So this happened just a couple of days ago, actually. So me and my wife were driving home from Mirdif all the way back to Barsha. So we were on the E311. And we passed an accident site, and it was very clear that the accident was very fresh. There were two cars involved. One of them was completely smashed up on the side. No ambulance, no police on the scene yet. And now my wife is a nurse. She's a registered nurse. She works at a private hospital here in Dubai. So immediately we thought that the right thing to do would be to pull over and see if everything is okay.
Okay.
So as soon as we pulled over, we walked out of the car, and one of the people involved in the accident started yelling and saying that, are you a doctor? Are you a nurse? That there's someone inside one of the cars that's not moving. So obviously we ran with him to the car that was smashed up. And sure enough, when we got there, we saw that there was someone inside who was completely motionless. And there was blood coming out of his head as well. So my wife, being the registered nurse that she is, she did check his pulse. And luckily there was a pulse. And after that, she said that let's not do anything at all, right? Because apparently the issue is that if you do move a body like that, and there is already some kind of injury, then you could aggravate it further in terms of spine and neck, that kind of thing. So we had already called the ambulance and the police and everything like that, and they got there very, very quickly. They were there in about 3 or 4 minutes. And as soon as they got there, they asked us if we had touched the body at all, and my wife said that she did. She had touched the body, and that she did check for a pulse, and they asked her, are you a professional? Are you a medical professional? And she told them that she is a nurse. So that's how that happened. Now, this is not the first time my wife has been part of something like this. 3 or 4 months ago, she came across another accident in Abu Dhabi.
Wow.
And the person, unfortunately, had already died. So he was already on the road. And she did check for a pulse there as well. But obviously, in that case, it was too late. But that is what happened a couple of days ago.
It's interesting, isn't it? So, I mean, as you mentioned, your wife is a registered nurse. She's trained professionally for this. And just the very basics of checking for a pulse, checking for vitals as well. I suppose that's about as far as one can go in that situation.
Yeah, I don't think what else you could do, right? I mean, you do check if the person is alive. And if they're not, what do you do, right? Well, what is the next step? step. If you think that the pulse is weak, for example, you go on and take a further step and try and resuscitate or whatever. So I think the basic that anyone should be knowledgeable enough to do is check for a pulse. But then again, what if I had done that? What if I had checked for the pulse? I have no medical experience. I have no first aid training at all, right?
It's circumstance as well, though, isn't it? Because as soon as you put your hands onto somebody in need, then you are taking an element of responsibility. And that could be something that is taken forward by police or by investigators after the event. But I suppose it's also circumstance. If you've got a victim who is trapped in a car or whatever and you're waiting for the emergency vehicles to respond to that instant, it is a matter of just monitoring the situation. I'm just wondering, you know, if you are put into a situation when there is a fire in the car or something like that, and again, how long can you wait before you are pushed into a situation of going, look, if I don't extract this body somehow or try and get them out of the car, then we could be in for a very nasty situation here.
It's almost like a split second decision you have to make, right?
Yeah. Will you rue that, or is that something you'll regret for the rest of your life or not?
But at the same time, the last thing you want to do is make the situation worse, right? If there is a chance that if you do wait a couple of minutes for professional help to arrive, then the person has a better chance of living rather than just sort of jumping into the situation and trying to be a hero, right?
Well, you've got a hero that you're married to, that's for sure. Congratulations. Well, a huge thanks to you for coming into the studio and telling us that story. All the best to your wife as well, Mohammed Suleiman. Join us live in the studio to recount a recent experience when he and his wife were out. You can listen back to that one on the podcast. In a few minutes, we'll be speaking to a lawyer who will tell us all about the Good Samaritan laws of the UAE. They are ever evolving. Stay tuned for that. You might just save a life or get out of trouble by listening into that particular segment. So stay tuned for that. We are talking Good Samaritan laws here on the show as well. Listen, we've got a couple of competitions running for you. A couple of tickets to go to the men's semi-final, the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championships. That's right, you heard me right. The men's semi-final, no less. Arguably the best day of the tournament. And a couple of tickets to go to the forthcoming Desert Warrior Challenge taking place right here in Dubai, down at the Al Qudra course on the 22nd of February. If you'd like to be part of either of those, there's no particular question for either of them. Basically, you just need to join the conversation. Share your thoughts on today's talkers, Samaritan laws, Heimlich manoeuvre. Would you step in? When is appropriate and when is not appropriate to step in and help somebody in need? Share your thoughts on either of those or any of those topics, and you could well be a winner. We're still talking about what to do in the case of a medical emergency. Would you help out a stranger? How much do we know about the country's Good Samaritan laws? Do we know when and when to and when not to intervene? We've been asking that question to residents.
I would help, but my help would start off by getting a medical expert to the scene, essentially either calling an ambulance, calling whatever is needed, and then trying to help in any way that I could do without obviously making sure that I'm not going to make the situation worse.
I think if the situation was so hard to like manage, I will call 999. But if I can help and I have the information to help that person who's like having the emergency or like dying, I will definitely will help him.
I would help. I'm a certified first responder. I'm a rescue diver. I have a little experience. So yeah, I think I'll try to my best to apply what I know.
People do amaze me as well. Now, that's one thing that's cropping up in this conversation. You know, we take people for granted, and there are so many qualified people there. They might be sitting alongside you performing whatever role it is in your office at the moment, but they do have hidden talents. The number of people with qualifications to this end constantly surprises me. Let's get some more, though, on the legalities at play here. All good and well talking about the Samaritan law, but how much do we fully understand it? Let's get the latest from Rebecca Kelly, lawyer at Morgan Lewis, joins us now live on the line. Rebecca, thanks very much indeed for your time this morning.
No, thanks for having me. Good to be back on.
Listen, Rebecca, I know that you are aware of this story that's got everyone talking about this. You know, the backdrop being that John, whoever John might be, the mystery John out there, has saved Peter's life. Peter and his family would like to say thank you at the moment. Was John right to step in and help Peter?
Well, the biggest confusion around whether or not there exists sort of some penalty, I guess, for a bystander to assist somebody is because there isn't a standalone Good Samaritan law in the UAE as yet. There has been one announced that is due to be put before Cabinet this year. But I guess what we always, and what you'll find from your listeners as well, is what we always hear is that people are concerned that they will be held responsible for somebody's injury, let's say. But, I mean, it's very clear under the law what the obligations are, and you are actually held accountable if you do nothing. So what the question becomes is, what do you need to do to make sure that you absolve yourself of that liability? And sometimes if you are the person that walks by, and you mentioned before that you've, you know, we're surrounded by people that have the ability to respond, they're first responders in very various situations. If you have that ability, then the law places an obligation on you to assist. But what it doesn't place on you is an obligation on those people who can't assist to render life-saving assistance. What it does, though, require you to do is to get assistance. You cannot refrain from assisting somebody, actually. And that's in line with both the current UAE law as it stands and also the Sharia principles that underpin the UAE law, which require people to render assistance. And so I think that a lot of the miscommunication and misunderstanding around this is because people are held responsible if they don't do anything. It's a difficult decision to make, I guess, if you're driving past an accident, as opposed to if you are standing there and like the scenario in the pharmacy where somebody, you know, John, let's say, sees that somebody else is in trouble and renders immediate assistance. But you are under an obligation under UAE law, just to be clear, to render assistance. But it's how that rendering of your assistance is actually done and executed is how you would be judged under the law, let's say.
And just, Rebecca, to clarify on that, so the Samaritan law that we like to talk about and the media likes to bang a drum about quite a lot has been approved in theory, but it's not yet been passed into law, is that right?
That's right. And it's actually the Rescuer Protection Law. And okay. what it is, it's actually a piece of legislation that pulls out of the Penal Code various provisions about giving bystanders the, you know, the confidence or the, you know, immunity, let's say, from prosecution if they have rendered that assistance. It's in line with a lot of other jurisdictions' Good Samaritan principles. The only thing that's different is that it's actually been driven by the Ministry of Health. In other situations with new laws, it may be driven by the business sector, or it may be driven by the legislators themselves. But in this particular situation, it's driven by the Ministry of Health with the sole purpose to give people those sort of that comfort around the fact that if you do render assistance, you won't be held responsible for it unless you do something that is outside of your capability. So as a lawyer, I'm not trained in, open heart surgery. So I'm not going to perform open heart surgery on an individual if I think that I believe that the particular individual needs it. You know, there is a line, and that line is if, and using me as an example, as a lawyer, if I recognise that somebody is in need of medical assistance, my obligation under the law as it stands is to make sure that I call emergency services.
Is there an element of common sense that needs to be at play here? I don't think anyone is advocating anyone jumping out their car and being a have-a-go hero at the roadside on the scene of an accident. But again, is there that element of common sense approach?
It has to be common sense, yeah. Doesn't it? Because we are only, unfortunately, not everybody is medically trained, and so there has to be an element of common sense. And when people straight away deflect back to the law and say, well, what are my obligations? What you actually need to be absolutely conscious of is that you are obliged under our laws in the UAE just to get help. You don't have to be the hero. You don't have to, if you're not wearing fire protective uniforms or anything, you're not the one that should be climbing into a burning car to retrieve somebody, but you should be trying to get the fire brigade there so that they can actually render the appropriate assistance. I think what we all want to do is to help. And I think that that is where we start from. The starting position is always that actually people do want to help, but they do get nervous about whether or not if they help, will they contribute to somebody's injuries or will they make the situation worse? And certainly with accidents, for example, the number one cause of more accidents is people stopping by and offering no assistance but just having a look.
Do you feel that a clarification on this law and the naming of said law and the passing of draft into law would help overcome that element, that grey area, if you like, that reluctance for people to get involved, that fear of getting involved?
Yeah, it will. And I think also just an overarching understanding of the legislation will assist. So making sure, like once this law is put into place, making sure from an employer's perspective that all of their employees understand it and that there's enough of the publicity that's generated through the media about understanding what the different obligations are. But in principle, I can say that the obligations won't change that much with respect to this particular law. What it does, though, is it takes those restrictions out of the penal code and puts it into this law and says, everybody, if you see an accident, do what you know is the best thing to do, and that is to get appropriate assistance.
Rebecca, always lovely to get your thoughts. Really appreciate them this morning. To you and all the team at Morgan Lewis, thank you so much indeed for joining us.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Rebecca Kelly, the partner at Morgan Lewis, joining us live on the line. Find out more at their website, Morgan Lewis and Bockers. And find out all the latest from the team there. So some great thoughts there, some great insight as well. Lots of comments coming through. Give us a flavour of what people are saying. Zina
Zalameh. Thank you very much for texting. In my opinion, it's unfortunate that people get held responsible when trying to save a life and accidentally causing additional injuries. I heard of a case in the US where a person crashed his car and started catching fire. The driver was inside the crashed vehicle unconscious. A good Samaritan pulled over and got him out of the car. By the time the ambulance got there, the car was completely burned and the victim was alive but with severe damage to his spine that left him unable to walk again. The Good Samaritan got sued for causing damages to the spine while pulling him out of the car and saving his life. So Rodolfo has two takeaways from that story. There's nothing more valuable than your life, regardless of the limitations you might have. So you have to give thanks just for being alive. And second, Rodolfo, this kind of law and legislation only discourages people from doing the right thing morally and ethically, which is helping each other out.
We are talking about first aid training. Do you have first aid training? Are you familiar with the country's Good Samaritan laws? Or, as Rebecca Kelly there, the partner of Kelly Lewis, was joining us just a few minutes ago, was saying, not so much the Good Samaritan laws, or as it's been known here and tabled here, the Rescuer Protection Law. Very similar to Good Samaritan laws that are in place in other countries, aimed at boosting survival rates and also encouraging the public to help in potentially life-threatening situations. Are you a reluctant observer? Is there a fear of getting involved for you? Are you somebody who knows what to do when it comes to CPR, when it comes to HIMO, when it comes to other means as well? Or are you one of those have-a-go heroes that is the first one to jump in? A few of the questions we've been posing on our online poll, which is ongoing at the moment and is being monitored by Zina Zalameh. A question we're asking is?
We are asking, would you help a stranger in a medical emergency? So I've done a Twitter poll. 71% of you said yes, any way I can, and 29% said no, might get me in trouble. On Instagram, even more people want to help. 88% yes, any way I can, and 12% said no, might get me in trouble. The polls are still ongoing on both Twitter and Instagram, so get on that poll. And just a recap of what Rebecca Kelly was saying earlier, you are under an obligation to render assistance, but it's how that is done and executed is where you will be judged under the proposed UAE law that's been put to the cabinet. And for most of us, it's simply by calling 999.
We opened the show just last hour telling you of a story that has sparked a huge discussion online at the moment. The story centered around an individual who was here on holiday who had his life saved here in the UAE at a pharmacy. at Spinney's Springtown Centre in Dubai. All we know of the person that saved that life is that his name is John. The search for John is ongoing at the moment. What we do know, though, that the man who was forever indebted to John is Peter Grainier from Germany, who was on holiday here in the UAE, still on holiday here in the UAE, and I'm absolutely blessed to say joins us live on the line to tell us more. Peter, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Good morning.
Really appreciate your time this morning, and thanks for your patience as well. Now, talk us through the situation. When were you aware on the day that the incident occurred that things were not as they should be?
Well, I was sitting at McDonald's waiting for the children, my grandchildren were coming, which I picked them up from school. And while eating, my wife had a McDonald's hamburger for me, and I sort of took the first bite, and immediately when I swallowed, I started having to choke. I have a breathing problem, and I didn't know what happened, and it was getting worse and worse, and I started swallowing, trying to get it out, and nothing happened. It's getting worse. So my wife was there, and we walked across to the, they call it a community pharmacy, I think. I thought, as a pharmacist, they normally know quite a bit about this problem. And when I got up there, by that time, I don't know what really happened. I know that this big man came up on me and put his arms around my chest in a Heimlich system, and it didn't help. And then I sort of slowly passed out. Didn't know very much anymore what happened to me. And I know that somebody was pounding my back and pounding my front as well. And the next thing I woke up was this big piece of onion coming out, and I could breathe, and I could see the man standing in front of me.
That's when you sort of came round and you saw this this man that we now know is known as John as well. Are you of the opinion that if John had not been in the vicinity, that you wouldn't be here to tell this story?
Absolutely.
To that end, and I know that you weren't able, John, this mystery John who came into the pharmacy, saved your life, Peter. Yes. Obviously, the story has now gone wild around the city. And yet he disappeared. He's disappeared from the scene. We've yet to been able to locate him as well.
He just gave us his name, and my wife asked for some more questions, and he just walked off. And all my wife said that she didn't know what happened because I was all blue. When she looked down at me, I was on the floor at that time. And shortly after I came out, the paramedics arrived, and they were absolutely fantastic. They took ECG, they took blood pressure, they blood test, everything else. They were very, very, very proficient.
If you had the opportunity, if John were listening to this radio station this morning, what would you say to John?
Well, difficult to say. All I can say, thank you very, very much, and I'd like to keep in contact with him.
I know that your wife has made an appeal on Facebook. I know the family are very much involved in that. So hopefully we can get more details on the identity of John. What have you learned from this incident, from this situation, Peter?
Well, what I've learned, I think, A, don't take big bites. Chew it. I must have picked up this onion piece as I took the first bite, pulled it in. Because it was flat, it was nearly, say, 2.5 centimeters in diameter, and it probably lodged itself inside. So what I've learned is basically that I think everybody should learn this Heimlich method of how to help people and give later on mouth-to-mouth, because that's what he did at the time. That's what I was told. I don't know. I honestly don't even know where I was. I was gone.
You mentioned there that you were gone. You are indebted to John, who has gone at the moment, but hopefully we will find him as well. This has sparked a conversation here, Peter, about this whole idea of people stepping in, whether it be Good Samaritan law or rescue law, whatever. In terms of from where you were, and you are indebted to somebody who did step in and take the mode, you would, I'm assuming, be of the opinion that if people can help, they should help.
Yes, absolutely. I must also say that the pharmacist at the pharmacy was also very, very helpful, tried anything they could. But, of course, John was there at the time. What if somebody sent him? Only God will know.
Well, Peter, I understand that you are on holiday at the moment. Are you continuing your holiday in good spirits?
Well, I'm not actually holiday. I'm a 2-month period here helping my son with the children. you know, he's starting a new job and pick up the children from school and stuff like that.
Well,
and I'm actually, we're from South Africa, but I'm German, but descent, my wife's Norwegian.
Well, you've obviously got something to tell the grandchildren about for many years to come as
Absolutely.
Well, Peter.
Goes into my memoir.
We will be waiting for that memoir with bated breath. Peter Greiner, thank you so much indeed. All the best to you, my friend, and all best to family as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
When would you and what would prevent you from getting involved? And that reluctance is something that is impacting on others. So thank you for that one. That fear of getting in trouble, does that prevent people from getting involved? If so, we'd love to hear from you.
And this discussion has also sparked a debate on Twitter. I've put up a poll there. A lot of people have been posting comments. Harmon, thank you for your comment. Depends on the medical emergency situation. If I'm trained or certified and understand the appropriate aid to offer, yes. If not, calling for help is also help, I guess. And Ramji Yahoo says 100% residents of the GCC help people in cases of emergency. So this survey or poll may be applicable only in other countries. And Laird of Glencoe, no, because under UAE law, if the person dies or is injured, you would be responsible. Sorry, but that is the law. We heard earlier from Rebecca Kelly that there is a law called Rescuer Protection Law, and it's being put to the UAE cabinet. You are under an obligation to render assistance. So if you're a certified first responder, you can do a little bit more. But if you are not first aid trained, then what you could do is call emergency services.
We heard from Sahel a little earlier on. He was appealing to our better judgment just to give him tickets because he was feeling a bit under the weather. See what we did there. See how you get on, Sahel. You're in the hat as it is. We also heard from Samir as well, saying, I'd add that different people react differently to emergency situations. Just the fact that you have to some level of training doesn't mean you'll be able to provide the assistance unless you have the right mental preparedness. Samir, thank you for that. Jose, well done to you. You've been in touch as well, saying this, common sense is the right approach. However, not everyone has the same understanding of what common sense is. Intent should be included. If in an emergency, the rescuer is trying to preserve life and causes injury but keeps the injured person alive, that should be enough. Should be, Jose, but is it always enough? Get your thoughts in on that one. I just want to spin this one as well, if I may, because we've got a poll running on this, posing this very similar question. We'll see how the poll is getting along in just a few moments' time. But we've thought it a lot about from the rescuer's point of view. You know, would you get involved? Put yourself in Peter's shoes. Put yourself in the shoes of somebody who is having a heart attack, having a stroke, choking to death, in a life-threatening situation. Wouldn't you want somebody to step in and help you, regardless of what the law says at the moment, regardless of what regulations say or whatever? If you had the choice to be saved and tell your story like Peter did just now, would you not want somebody, trained or not trained, to give you that small percentage of chance to continue? Have a little think about that one and share your thoughts with us on it, because I think that's another way that we need to look at this. All good and well looking at it from a rescuer's point of view, but what about the rescued's point of view? Would you not want somebody, be they paramedic trained or not, to step in and give you just that little iota of help and a little chance of survival? If so, we'd like your thoughts on that. 4001 is the best place to start that conversation. Let's get the latest from the online poll.
Online poll, okay, a majority, an overwhelming majority of you say yes, I will help in any way I can. And a very small percentage have said no, because it might get me in trouble.
It's The Agenda, your mid-morning phone-in, and the lines are now live.
Join the conversation on 04-871-5500.
If somebody was in need, if somebody was choking, would you perform the Heimlich manoeuvre on them? If somebody was trapped in a car, would you stop and help them? Would you extract them from the car? If somebody needed mouth-to-mouth or CPR, would you know what to do? But more importantly, would you do? Keith. Thank you to you for your text message. First aid should be taught at schools so that upon graduation, all students go into the world and be useful in any situation, no matter how big or small, until paramedics arrive. This will grow. Whole communities can be trained in time. Cheers, Keith. Let's get some more thoughts.
We've got another text. Important conversation, as this just happened again yesterday to another woman who then looked for her rescuers on Facebook. I was able to connect them, but I'm not the one to speak about it. It's vital that people feel safe extending help just in case they're not able to fix it and then are held liable, although they had the right intention and knew what they were really doing. We've got another one. As far as I know, in the UAE, you should not help anyone in the case of an emergency. If the situation gets worse and the person dies, we are responsible. Please, can you verify this? From Alex?
We are undergoing that at the moment because obviously this is the grey area we're talking about at the moment, Alex. Thank you very much indeed for that one. We'll get more clarification for you from our next guest. Just before that, though, another one, this one coming through from Moses, who's been in touch with us. Hey, Moses, thank you for your thoughts. Says this: I'm sure all would like to help when you see someone in danger or in an accident, but not knowing what to do is the obstacle. Hospitality sector, especially hotels, have members of their team trained to be first aiders. This is a mandatory requirement by DTCM. I'm sure this program has helped many visitors and helped them have a good holiday. In the objectives of sharing best practices, this is something that could be implemented in larger organisations, any company over 100 employees, or part of the RTA awareness campaigns conducted in leading malls over the country. Again, a good lead-in point and suggestion to our next guest, because joining us on the line now is a representative of Safe Hands here in the UAE. Safe Hands is a Dubai-based first aid training company that was set up back in 2014 and certified by the Dubai Corporation for Ambulance Services. Joining us live on the line is the head of Safe Hands, Alice Davis, who joins us live. Thanks so much indeed for your time this morning.
No problem at all. Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate you jumping into the conversation as it grows this morning, as we try and locate our mystery John on the back of this one story that has prompted everyone into this conversation at the moment. But let's, if we can, let's look at some of the questions that are coming through. We had that question just a few moments ago, Zina, from Alex. Maybe you could just repeat that one to us.
Yes. In the UAE, you should not help anyone in the case of an emergency. If the situation gets worse and a person dies, we are responsible. Can you verify this?
Can you verify that, Alice?
So what we aim with our first aid training programs is to help people to know what to do in a first aid emergency. And what's important to mention is that all these skills that we teach people are designed to help and not hinder. As we heard from Rebecca earlier, in terms of the laws and regulations, with these skills, if you have them at hand, they are only there to help. And if you don't have them, you don't know what to do, you do the minimum, and that would be perhaps, let's say, call for an ambulance. But that's still part and part helping that individual.
We heard from Peter a little earlier on, who's prompted this conversation through his rather extraordinary story of being saved in a pharmacy down at the Springs Town Centre around about 3 o'clock this Sunday just gone. You've been following this particular story online and right here on the show. From what you can ascertain, Alice, how certain are you that John, the mystery John, has had some form of official or formal first aid training?
So we can't ascertain whether he has or hasn't, but showing that he was able to know what to do, that would imply that he has. But with that, in a situation where someone is choking, where someone has stopped breathing, whether it be heart attack, stroke, and requiring CPR, the worst case scenario for that person is death. Therefore, whether you have the skills or whether you don't have the skills, you are only going to help if you act in that situation.
In terms of this particular story, but also it's prompted a number of other stories that people have shared anonymously and otherwise here this morning on the show. A lot of people showing moments of heroism or just helping out, jumping in to save somebody's life or try and give them the best chance of survival, but then leaving the scene before paramedics get there. Is that something that is all too common here at the moment?
Yes, we do hear of this. The people do, yes, of course, have that hesitation and fear, and therefore do leave the scene. With our company, Safe Hands UAE, being in the region for as long as we have conducted or trained over 4,500 individuals. So as you can imagine, we have heard many a story, some positive, some negative, with positives of people having the skills at hand and saving those lives, and with negatives, people not having those skills and therefore losing lives and loved ones because of it. People leaving the scene, yes, it can be due to that laws and regulations, but hopefully with this year and that implementation of the law, people will have that confidence to stay right next to that individual when the ambulance services do arrive.
Alice, let's talk about first aid and basic first aid, if you like. In conversation a little earlier on the show and listening to a lot of what listeners are saying, this common perception these days that some people might not have had any formal first aid training, but they've seen it on the TV and therefore they think they can do it as well. How dangerous is that approach?
We wouldn't suggest that. With Safe Hands here, we encourage people to come on to the full certified training courses. And with our background as instructors, we're all qualified nurses. So we're very passionate about not only having the skill set, having the practical element of the course, but also enabling people to understand the reason and the purpose of the skills and what it is you're actually doing, which quite often people don't, lacking that knowledge of what it means to provide CPR, what would happen if you don't provide the Heimlich manoeuvre, what would happen if someone had a febrile seizure. So yes, of course, there are plenty of things online at the moment on YouTube, but without having that practical skill, especially with CPR, people are always absolutely amazed as to how much pressure and force that it requires in order to get the heart beating and to get blood pumping around the body.
We had a text message from Moses a little earlier on. He was talking about his work in the hospitality sector. He was praising the mandatory requirements of the DTCM and seeing a great advance in the hospitality sector, specifically hotels, with regards to basic first aid training for many in that sector. He was wondering whether this is something that could be passed on to larger organisations. Is that something that you at Safe Hands would share an opinion on in terms of the fact that if a hotel has to go through this sort of official first aid training, why don't larger organisations here?
So we do. We provide trainings for larger organisations. There is a set requirement under the UAE Labour Law to have an amount of individuals trained within that working environment. But we always encourage to go above and beyond that. For that reason, that emergencies arise when we least expect them. So the more people that you do have trained, the more hands that you have to be able to provide that care. Perhaps we need more guidance in terms of what those requirements are, but as it stands, there are a standard here that companies have, and we train many of these companies, large industries, and even small as well.
What is the last question from me, Alice? But what is the is there a rule of thumb that a resident, a citizen, should apply when it comes to a situation like this to try and negate that reluctance, that fear of getting involved?
So yes, there is. It's as Rebecca mentioned earlier. According to Sharia law, if individuals have the skills, then by that law, they should be able to should act within that emergency. And this is what we're trying to encourage, is take away that hesitation, take away that fear. When it comes to life-threatening emergencies, you have, when someone stops breathing, you have less than 4 minutes to act before damage starts to occur. Therefore, trying to instill that confidence in individuals is very important. And that's why such trainings for everybody, for them to have that knowledge and understanding as to why it's important and why they should provide that care.
Alice, really appreciate your time today. Alice Davis is the head of Safe Hands. You can find out more about Safe Hands online. Just go to safehandsuae.com and answer their call to arms. If an emergency was to happen right now, would you be able to help? They can help you make that right decision, get yourself online and, of course, on social media platforms to find out more. Simon has come up with one of those. He joins us live on the line. Simon texted us on 4001. Simon, I like this one. It's a nice idea. Tell us what you think would help.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Good, mate. How are you?
Very well, very well. So what I was suggesting was that every 2 years, everybody has to go and renew their Emirates ID or their visas and what have you. And it would be an ideal opportunity for anybody renewing their IDs to have some basic first aid training. What it would culminate in is that it would mean that within 2 years, everybody in the country would have received some sort of basic training in first aid. On your Emirates ID, they could put some sort of mark, maybe a little green tick or whatever, which would then potentially exonerate you from any liability or any concerns of liability if things didn't work out well. But it would just help to maybe build a bit more community spirit and to get people a bit more involved. And hopefully, as the gentleman was saying earlier, with people who are trained at school or whatever, it would help to get the whole community trained. I think the concerning point is it's all very well saying lots of people would like to get involved. The flip side is about 20% or so of people said they wouldn't. So basically, if you're the guy who's coughing up onion rings at McDonald's or whatever it is, one in five people are going to just stand and watch you.
Yeah, and that seems to be that idea of reluctance seems to be something that is a problem here at the moment.
I think the reluctance is a problem, but I also think that the legal ramifications of getting involved here are very, very grey. And if there was some way in which you could say to people, hand on heart, listen, if you act with good intentions, then it will be viewed as such. And if you can show that you've had some basic training, I'm not saying a medical degree or what have you, but if you've been shown how to do CPR, if you've been shown how to do the Heimlich manoeuvre, then at least you've got a fighting chance.
I take that point, because I think you're quite right, because you know we look at it from the rescuer's point of view and those that are saying, should I get involved, should I not get involved? If it was you or me choking on a piece of onion, we'd want someone to give us a chance, wouldn't we?
I'm actually banned from McDonald's as part of a New Year's resolution. I mean, I just can't be dealing with it anymore. So I don't know if you can choke on any vegan food or not.
You've taken life into your own hands, have you?
it was that or nothing. So yeah, there's always that. But I think that the point that I was trying to make was an idea that the UAE in this sort of year of tolerance and giving or whatever, it's a chance to sort of help the community to feel more as one. And at the moment, this is flavour of the month. And it's a case of, okay, so in 2 years' time, everybody's got a bit of a taste for this. And there might be something else at that point. So whenever you go and you renew your visa or you go and renew your Emirates ID, you're not simply turning up to pay a couple of hundred dirhams. You're getting a little bit of something back and a little bit more involvement and building the community side of things.
I like it. It has been copyrighted by you, Mr. Simon Murphy. Well done to you, indeed. Good to speak to you, Si. Thanks so much indeed for that one. A nice suggestion and a good idea. Got any other good ideas? If you do have any, then please do share them with us as we get into the final hour of the show. We had Simon Murphy on a little earlier on. Simon came up with a nice idea suggesting that when you renew your Emirates ID card, you could receive basic first aid and CPR training. Possibly a green tick system on your card exonerates you from liability in a situation like this. That's picked up by Susie saying a first aider's card updated every 6 to 12 months because we don't use these skills daily is easy to forget what procedures to perform. And then somebody else also saying I think carrying a valid first aider's card would be a good idea. Lots of text coming in on 4001, but there's also comments coming through on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, on other social media platforms.
Yes, we've got Jyotika. Jyotika, thank you for your comment. Jyotika says, I would help in any way I can, even if it entails calling for an ambulance for the police or the police or relatives or another way possible. Tom, great to know about the Samaritan law or rescuer protection law being put in place should be made known to the public. We've also got other text messages coming in. I believe you should always help in whatever capacity you can. Never wait for the other guy to help. Do it yourself.
just going back to reverting to a text message we received earlier, somebody saying important conversation just happened again yesterday to another woman who then looked for her rescuers on Facebook. I was able to connect them, but I am not the one to speak about it. It's vital that people feel safe extending help just in case they are not able to fix it and then are held liable, although they had the right intention and knew what they were really doing. Read that out earlier. There's been a follow-up to that saying this. I don't know the person who was rescued. She had posted on a British Mum's page, but I figured out the rescuers by her description. Interestingly enough, in speaking to the rescuer, she was surprised how many people didn't step up to help. And we wondered why. Was it this fear of repercussions? Was it the fear of lack of knowledge or plain oblivion? And should food outlets have staff trained for this? Lesson learned. And my husband and I both watched a tutorial on the Heimlich manoeuvre last night.
Good on you.
People are making a difference, that's for sure.
For sure. And this conversation has extended to, you know, staff being trained with first aid, nannies, certain members of society, of the community. And it's hoped that all of us will get some form of first aid training. And of course, with a new law coming in place, it would be helpful if we know the details of the law so we know what to do in such cases.
This is one that's come through from Miles saying, if you have other lives relying on you, it's a different story. Kids, a spouse, parents, etc. Attempting to help the stranger could harm your entire family. Call me whatever you like, but it's always family first in my book. Miles, thanks for your honesty. Much appreciate that one. This one from Amy saying, I understand what people are trying to say, but other people's view is justified. This isn't just, you know, court troubles. Without a say, you could be thrown into jail. Most people here work very hard to support their family and to also to prevent them from having to go back to their homeland where conditions are worse. If they get into trouble, if they get with the law, or even, dare I say it, deported, their whole life goes back to basics. It's the sad reality we live in.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.